Hi everyone, thanks for listening to the Daily Gospel Exegesis podcast. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to respond to a listener question that's come in. I always love to respond to your questions, and this is a really specific biblical one about the way to interpret a certain phrase in the Gospels, and that's what we specialize in this podcast, so I'm more than happy to help address this question. So this question comes from James. He says, I have a question regarding what Jesus said, that those who had would be given more, and those who didn't would have been deprived even of what they had. So James here is referring to one of Jesus' favorite quotes. Is probably one we don't often like to talk about because there's some fairly strong language, but Jesus does use it several times in his ministry. So James goes on, he says, this occurs in the parable of the talents in Matthew's gospel, and it is also found in Mark. So there James is referring to Mark chapter 4, you'll see that quote, and it's also in the parable of the talents in Matthew chapter 25, and James didn't mention this, but it's also in the parable of the talents Luke's version in Luke 19. So again, I'll read out the phrase that James is asking about, that those who had would be given more, and those who didn't would have been deprived even of what they had. That's the translation that James is reading from. So James says, I've heard people apply this saying to the dynamics of money management, and wealthy people often use this saying to justify the widening gap between rich and poor. This is a really interesting interpretation. I must say I've never heard this before, but James, it sounds to me like you may have heard this from a prosperity gospel preacher or something related to that. The prosperity gospel theology basically says that wealth is a blessing from God, and they sort of read a lot of passages in that direction. And this, the one you've heard, seems to be quite an extreme prosperity gospel where it says something like the widening gap between rich and poor is actually what God wants, because God blesses those who are wealthy and he doesn't bless those who are poor. And they're sort of using this phrase, Jesus' own phrase, to support that. I don't think that's a good reading of it at all. And I think if you read any good biblical commentary, they'll say that that's not what's going on. So again, let's read out the phrase, and I'll read this from Luke's version in Luke chapter 19. So towards the end of that parable, Jesus says, I tell you, to everyone who has will be given more, but from the man who has not, even what he has will be taken away. So it is certainly an enigmatic phrase. I think the basic meaning of this is something along these lines. Those who cooperate with the grace that God has given them will progress further in the kingdom and will be given more grace. Those who don't cooperate with the basic grace that God has given them, even the grace that they have will be taken away and they won't progress further in the kingdom, and that will have eternal consequences as well. So Jesus uses this phrase in different contexts in his ministry. He actually says it on different occasions, but he seems to make the same basic point all the time. And if you read each of the times Jesus says this in context, it's basically Jesus teaching about who's going to get into the kingdom, because he's surrounded by a culture of people who thinks that just because they're Jewish, they're all going to get into the kingdom because they're God's people. And Jesus constantly has to correct that. One of the ways he does that is by using this phrase, by saying that those who cooperate with God and obey his commandments and obey his will, they'll get into the kingdom. Those who don't cooperate with God's grace, they won't get into the kingdom. That is the basic meaning of this phrase. That is how I take it. And a lot of the commentaries that I've read say things that are fairly similar to that. So Jesus here is not teaching about money. He's not saying anything like, Jesus is going to give you more money if you do good things with that money. Jesus never says anything along those lines. So James says, is it correct to apply the expression in this manner? Is being savvy with money a sign of spiritual endowment? So as I've said here, James, no, it's definitely not. That is a bad interpretation of the passage. And I think if you read the parable of the talents in context, either in Matthew or in Luke, you'll see that that's definitely not the point Jesus is making. And James goes on, in other passages, Jesus is harsh about people who accumulate riches. Yes, you're exactly right, James. On the whole, Jesus is critical of the rich. particularly in terms of the way that they put their money before God. So Jesus doesn't have a lot of good things to say about rich people. So when prosperity gospel preachers try to make their points here, they really haven't got a whole lot of gospel texts they can use to support their case. So they end up drawing on texts like the one we're talking about here, and they twist it to mean what they want it to mean. But in its original context, that's not what it meant at all. So I hope I've helped you understand that particular one, James. If you want to hear a more in-depth treatment of that phrase, it's well worth listening to the exegesis of the parable of the talents. So you can hear the exegesis of Luke's version in Luke 19 on Wednesday of week 33 in Ordinary Time. So you might like to go through the podcast archives list to find that one. Or if you want to hear the exegesis of Matthew's version in Matthew 25, that's on the 33rd Sunday in Ordinary Time in Year A. So either of those, they're both around week 33, actually. Have a look through the podcast archives and you should be able to see the exegesis episodes for that. So thank you, James, so much for sending in your question. To all you listeners, I'm always happy to answer any questions that come in, any genuine biblical questions. So feel free to send them through to logicalbiblestudy@gmail.com, or you can even leave a voice message with a question, and the link to leave a voice message is in the show notes. Thanks once again for your support of the ministry. Let's get into today's episode. Hi everyone, welcome back to the podcast where we take a look at the gospel reading from today's Mass, and then we look at the literal sense of the text, which is often an angle that we don't get to hear in homilies, but it's the place we have to start. We have to start with the literal sense of the text. What was the original author trying to convey to his audience? And today, if you go to Mass, you'll hear from Mark chapter 6, verses 53 to 56. Having made the crossing, Jesus and his disciples came to land at Gennesaret and tied up. No sooner had they stepped out of the boat than people recognized him and started hurrying all through the countryside and brought the sick on stretchers to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, to village or town or farm, they laid down the sick in the open spaces, begging him to let them touch even the fringe of his cloak. And all those who touched him were cured. So the first thing to say is that if you've been following along with the Gospel of Mark in the last few weeks, we have skipped a little. So the last time we had a weekday, we looked at Mark 6, verse 30 to 34, and now we've skipped to verse 53 to 56. So the bit that we've missed in the middle, which is verse 34 through to 52, we don't hear it at this time of the year, but it's not taken out completely. It's just moved until just after Christmas. So on January 8th, we hear from the feeding of the 5,000 in Mark chapter 6. And then on January 9th, we hear Jesus walking on the water. So those two stories from Mark chapter 6, we won't get to hear in this sequence of days, but they are there in early January. So the context then is Jesus has just walked on the water up to verse 52. And now in verse 53, Mark says, having made the crossing. So he's talking about crossing the lake. So Jesus has just walked on the water, and now they come to land at Gennesaret. So that's a place that's somewhat close to Capernaum. It's a region of fertile plains along the western shore of the Sea of Galilee. Now, it's interesting because Jesus had originally, before the disciples got in the boat, he told them to go towards Bethsaida. But then the storm occurred and Jesus walked on the water, and they actually land at Gennesaret. So why does Jesus tell them to go one way, but then actually they end up landing somewhere else? Well, the storm could have put them off course, which is possible, but it's also possible that Jesus told them to go to Bethsaida because he wanted them to cross a certain path along the water, because he planned to walk on a certain part of the water. That's possible. Anyway, so they now land at Gennesaret, and verse 54, no sooner had they stepped out of the boat than people recognized him. So by this point, Jesus' name has spread far and wide, and everyone starts hurrying all through the countryside. So once again, word spreads really quickly that Jesus has set foot on land. and they're spreading the word among the towns, and then they start to bring the sick on stretchers. So these are people who are too sick to walk themselves, get carried in on stretchers. And they carry those stretchers to wherever he was. So Jesus is moving around the area, but crowds are following and the stretchers are following. And every time Jesus goes somewhere new, word spreads and people bring the sick people to him. So this is almost like the height of his ministry, of his early ministry in Galilee. Everyone knows where he is. Crowds are flocking from all directions. And it says Jesus went into villages or towns. So a village is like a small settlement, like Nazareth, which only has about 300 people. And perhaps a town might be like a larger regional center, like Capernaum, which is a bit of a larger fishing town. So he's moving all through Galilee, through the small towns, the big towns, and also the farmland or countryside, and crowds are flocking to him no matter where he goes. So this, what we're looking at here, is probably a summary of weeks or months of ministry. He's moving all around Galilee. Mark says they laid the sick in the open places, so that's kind of like the courtyards of the town. They're laying the sick down on the stretchers. And these sick people can't walk themselves, so their hope is that Jesus will walk past and heal them. And it says they're begging him, and so this is the relatives of the sick people are begging Jesus to let them touch the sick person. So you can imagine the relative saying, please touch this sick person on the stretcher. And so they believe that if the sick person could just touch even a part of Jesus' clothing, they would be healed. So they know Jesus' power to heal and they have faith that he can do it. This is a believing crowd. And it says if they could even just touch the fringe of his cloak, or a better translation, there would be tassel of his cloak. Now, this isn't like a fancy decoration. The tassel of the cloak is actually a Jewish requirement for men. It's the long fringe that Jewish men wore on the corners of their prayer shawl as a sign of their allegiance to the law of Moses, and that's specified in Numbers 15. So men would wear this special tassel, and it's almost like a mark of their identity as a Jew. And this is the part of the cloak that everyone wants to touch. So some scholars have said the fact that they're going for his tassel and that Jesus is always wearing his tassel means that Jesus is the model of faithfulness to the covenant. And it says, all those who touched him, in fact, a better translation, ours says touched him, but a better translation is touched it. So they're talking about touching the shawl. So apparently lots of the sick people are touching Jesus' shawl and he's allowing that to happen. And they're cured. So as earlier with, remember the woman with the hemorrhage, she was cured because of her faith. And that's what's going on here. Faithful people touching Jesus are healed. It's not some magical power in the cloak in and of itself. It's the people's faith. And of course, this would link well with Catholic teaching on relics. Although, you know, a lot of relics, none of the relics are from Jesus exactly. But it's a similar concept, is that holy people can leave behind some of their holiness in the objects that they had. And so obviously the Catholic teaching on relics is developed a little bit from passages such as this, where people want to touch Jesus' clothes. So that's our short passage today from Mark chapter 6. There's one reference to the in the Catechism to this passage, and it's one that we've heard a lot over the last few weeks in Mark. So that's paragraph 1504, which is in the section about sick people before God. It says, often Jesus asks the sick to believe. He makes use of signs to heal, spittle and the laying on of hands, mud and washing. The sick try to touch him, for power came forth from him and healed them all. And so in the sacraments, Christ continues to touch us in order to heal us. So we learn a lot from this catechism passage. We learn that Jesus used lots of different ways of healing. And there's a reference you would have heard there in the passage to Mark chapter 6, where it says the sick try to touch him. So that's calling to mind the sick in Mark chapter 6 here, reaching out and hoping to touch Jesus. And then the paragraph goes on to say that we have access to that same healing power of Jesus through the sacraments. Okay, that's all for today. Please continue to share this podcast and tell other people about it. And I'd love to hear from you. And thanks for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow.